I am Plata on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the more exciting short films at the Ducks Documentary Film Festival is 3000. It has won a number of awards already and will be screening at the Van City Theatre on Wednesday the 9th of May at noon and Friday the 11th of May at 6 p.m. at SFU Woodward's. Its filmmaker, Asiniak, joins me now. I'll get her to tell us about the film, one that looks at the past, present, and future of Inuit. She has gone through the National Film Board's archive and has in her film depictions of the Inuit through historic footage, animation, and newsreels. It's a colorful sketch of the North, its abundance and mystery. Its soundtrack is quite moving as well. Asiniak, also known as Isabella Witalooktuk, is a filmmaker and artist. She assisted her father, the filmmaker Joby Witalooktuk, with his 2012 film, Temuti, which was made in Inukjak, the home of their extended family. You might have seen Asiniak on the cover of the Georgia Strait this past week as well. In Montreal, please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Asiniak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So we're talking this past weekend. You're in Montreal. You've been traveling quite a bit, though, for the film. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you've been picking up awards all over, I understand.
A few, yes. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. I went to the Berlinale in Scotland. I went to Skatmagovat, Satmi country, which I guess would politically be called Finland. And there I won. They actually did their first awards ever. And one was for the best Satmi film, and then the other one was for the best global indigenous short. So I was really honored to win their first ever award.
Yeah. Now, what was it? How was it that the film was received? Because I was talking to you before we started about how much I enjoyed the film a great deal. I'm sure audiences in the places that you've been have just taken to it, have they?
Yeah. I mean, luckily, when people want to say things, usually they're saying nice things to me. So I haven't heard anything negative, really. And also, like with other Indigenous people, there's a lot in common, especially with the Satmi, because they're living in a similar environment to us, and also have a similar history with the Gwich'in schools and stuff like that.
Right.
So that's another thing that, especially Indigenous people connect with histories in it, and of course everyone, because there's so many images and we tried to pick the most beautiful ones, it's also beautiful to watch.
Now you're coming to Vancouver for Docs, is that right?
Yes, I will be.
And I understand the reception is already quite good. I understand you're on the cover of the Georgia Strait?
Yeah, that was a surprise for me. But it's nice to see some pictures online of, I guess, in newsstands with my face on it.
Yeah, yeah. So this film, 3000, by the way, why is it called 3000?
Well, it's called 3000 because the film is ending in a future, and it's a proposed it's a proposed destination for what the year 3000 could look like in Inukjuak, Nunavik, where my family lives.
And I guess for you, it's a hopeful future, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of research for the film, both historically and then since it ends in the future, about what people have imagined already. And, you know, most people doing science fiction and going into the future set the world in a dystopian place. And I really try and bring something that doesn't already exist to the world. So that was one of the reasons that I decided I wouldn't make it dystopian. And then the other reason is because it's a lot more beneficial, I think, for what I'm trying to do and the people that I want to speak to, which are especially my nieces and then everyone growing up that's in us, that we can have a positive future, and we just have to make it.
As I said before we started, it's such a beautiful film in that have that eye to the future, and you see that in the marvelous the animation. That's all CGI, is that correct?
So I worked with two animators, uh-huh. and one of them works in a 3D animating environment, so that would be closer to CGI. And then the other animator that I worked with was doing 2D animation, so that's more like drawing. So there's those two styles of animation.
And I guess you have, as the filmmaker, you have input in when you work with them. The colors, because they are very striking. Were those ones that
we work everything out together? I bring forward an idea on what I like to see, and then I try and trust that they'll do their best and bring their own flavor to it as well, and that's what we end up with.
So the film you feature in the film, I guess footage from the NFB archive. Was there a lot of stuff that you had to look at, say, in terms of picking what you wanted to use for the film? Was that difficult in terms of, there must have been stuff that you had to leave out, did you?
There are things that we had to leave out that I was kind of sad about. There's one or two images that I still think about, but ultimately they didn't fit into the film, so it's the kind of situation where I think, like, well, maybe down the road there's another film. But for this one, I looked at, so online, there's the website, it's like images.nfb.ga or something like that,
right.
And anyone can look at the archives. And I looked through everything, so they have, like, a search engine, and I just, like, write Inuit and a few other words. So, like, I tried certain locations, certain activities, but I really discovered as I was doing it, the best thing to do is actually to just watch everything, because though people try and tag things, it would take a lot. It would take another few people going through and really tagging things properly to make it easier to search. But the other thing is that as the archives are basically the subject of the film, and if you're doing a documentary, you would spend a lot of time interviewing people and learning what the story is from people. But here I don't have a person, but I have an archive, and I realized actually only looking back that what I did was stop and listen to the archive and see what it had to say, rather than just putting through my own agenda. And I guess that was a turning point, because when I started just putting aside the wish list that I had and just paying attention to what I was seeing in front of me, that's when I was really able to get the more meaningful images and the more beautiful images collected in the film.
There are a lot of great pieces of film, and I guess the archive goes back a number of years. We see people, of course. We see the vast expanse of what it looks like up north. And the other striking thing is we see the animals themselves and what nature is like there. I've never been up north, and I understand you have family there, and you go there often, do you?
Yeah, I usually go twice a year.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's difficult to capture just how big and expansive and beautiful that place is on film, but, I mean, you do come close to it, don't you?
I did try and keep a balance to make sure that there weren't just people present, but the animals and the land too, because we're all living there together, and it is incredibly beautiful, bountiful, and actually, like, providing and giving land that we live on. And it might not be that way all year round, but it definitely does provide. And I know sometimes there's a big narrative about land being unforgiving, and I think that that's true some of the time, but not all of the time. And I really try and remember and try to remind everyone about all the other time when it's so life-giving.
Yeah.
Because that's how we survive, because it has lots to give.
Yeah. It's even though some of the spaces that we see in the film are empty, it very much is a character of its own, because it is mysterious. But at the same time, you do get a sense of the heritage of the tradition. And no better do you see that when you see people working the land or getting food. Wonderful images of people's hands and how they work. Was that deliberate?
A lot of things that are deliberate. Part of that, and maybe specific shots you're thinking of, have to do more with what people were interested in filming at the time. So what are people doing? How are people living? Trying to understand. Because a lot of the people filming, of course, are Southern, and are curious and want to share what Inuit are doing. So I think part of it maybe comes more from that kind of area, but it is definitely lucky from my point of view, because you do get to see these details. One of my favorite shots there, I think, that you're talking about, is of a woman cutting the fish with the ullu, and there, you can see her for a while, not in my film, but in the archive, cutting so fast and so skillfully. I think now people, like, if my family, I show it to my family, and they're just, like, blown away at how skillful and fast her cut is, like, wishing that we could do it as well as she did.
I enjoyed the one portion where you have the elderly woman. Is that a basket that she's sort of putting together?
Yeah, and that's actually my Anansiak, my grandmother. Yeah, that's her there, and she's made many baskets, and actually here I'm in my room, and I have three of her baskets with me.
A beautiful piece of work, and then we see her hands as well as she's crafting it. And I guess at one point she looks up. Did she know she was being filmed?
Yeah, she was being filmed for a documentary my father was making.
I see. Yeah.
And luckily, he let me use that footage for my film too. And she knew she was being filmed. She had just completed an interview when we just asked her, can we just see you making a basket?
Yeah. But other beautiful images, too, the kid sticking their finger in the eye of the salmon. It must have been fun putting this all together. And but at the same time, as I said a moment ago, stuff that you had to leave out, right?
Yeah. It's really fun. I'm making a film. I mean, I'm a filmmaker, so I love making a film, being in the process. You get to learn and think and be creative and have fun, and I also get to work with a team, so it was really fun editing everything together. I edited it together with Annie Jean, who was wonderful to work with, and we really paid a lot of attention to how the images fit together, how they cut together, you know, what's the right second to leave on sometimes.
Yeah.
Really going back and forth. And I think that there's a certain kind of rhythm so that you get long enough to see what you're looking at, but also, like, kind of keep moving, keep moving along. And, yeah, there's so many amazing images that just kind of, some of them blew me away, and I couldn't believe even what I was looking at.
The other thing that I was watching the film that struck me, and I watched it with earbuds in my ear, was how it sounded, and it sounded so beautiful. As a filmmaker, I guess you have to think about how the film looks, but for this project, how it sounded, I guess, was a priority, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's definitely a part of what I've learned about film, and a part of what I care about in film is that it's the audio is 50% of it, and we have to put in just as much effort in on the sound. And you know, I've went to film school, and I had to learn how to record sound, how to edit sound, and that really brought sound to my attention. And for a while, it actually can ruin film sometimes when there's not the effort put into the sound.
Right.
Because the sound is a really big part of the illusion. So what you're trying to do is to create a world and to have people, while they're watching it, believe that they're in that world. And as soon as you hear a bad recording or you hear something slip out of place, you get taken out of the film. So it's really important, if you want people remaining inside of your world, to have it be fully immersive, which means having sound that really like complements and helps carry the story forward.
Yeah, and there's beautiful throat singing. Beautiful music as well. We hear you in the film too, not just the narration, right?
You do. At the end, there's a children's song that I'm singing, and throughout the film, because we wanted to, because the archives are people, they're Inuit. Mm-hmm. In the archives, and you know, when you're filming, it's like as if people do something like on loop forever, which is kind of a weird thing. And I kind of, maybe as a way of coming to terms with that, as a way of acknowledging all of the people that are in it, and trying to like breathe a little life into it. We literally went in the recording studio and just did breathing in time with the picture and made sounds, like human sounds, to go with the throat singing to kind of give life back to the images. And I think that that was a really important thing to do, and I'm so happy that we did it.
You mentioned a moment ago your father, who was a noted filmmaker. Was it inevitable for you that you'd get into film yourself? Was it something that you wanted to do, say, at an early age?
Yeah, it is. It started, I guess, when I was in elementary school and high school. We were, like, starting to get video projects as homework.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, like, looking back, of course, that I always put in, like, 5 times the effort on those projects. I taught myself stop motion.
Uh-huh.
I taught myself editing. I think, like, yeah, no one taught me how to write a script. I just did it.
Yeah.
A 2-minute assignment would be 10 minutes with a commercial break or two. And then I thought that was just in high school. And then I left. I didn't think I wanted to go to art school or anything like that, even though I've always been an artist. And I kind of just ended up kind of accidentally getting to art school. And I'm really happy that I did. And when I ended up at a craft college, mm-hmm. and when I was there, I once again had a video class that we all had to do. And I, of course, went above and beyond on one of the assignments. And the teacher's like, maybe you should go to this film school. Mm. And when they said that, I was like, yeah, I think they're right. I've always loved doing this.
This is, as I said, a beautiful film, and I hate to ask this question of people, especially when they're talking about their current work, but are you working on something new now?
Well, luckily, I've been invited to do a residency in Aotearoa, uh-huh. in New Zealand, and I'm going to start research for another film there. But I don't want to tell you what it's
sure.
about yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if it's...
but it will yeah. definitely have to do with where I'm from and to do with my family.
Now, will it be longer? Because, I mean, this comes in at about 14 minutes, and I was sitting there, and it just whizzed by, and I was, you know, I wanted more, if you will. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're thinking about as you further your career, making longer films, say?
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is that every idea has its ideal form. So this idea is 14 minutes. The next idea might be half an hour, mm-hmm. might be 40, might be a feature. I definitely try and pay attention to the idea and what kind of time it needs. So yeah. It will all depend on the project.
It's marvelous work, and long may it continue. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Thank you.
3000 is at Doxa Wednesday, the 9th of May at noon at the Van City Theater, and then Friday, the 11th at 6 p.m. at SFU Woodwards. Asiniak joined me on the line from Montreal and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.